Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review was heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the subject of property when we come back. You know, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of our two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school, and this school includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, citation, or a complaint. Rule one says, don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and shut up. Now, if you can learn rule one, you can win about 90% of your legal cases. And that's because all of the evidence that is ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. Now, your government is fully capable of making their own case without any help from you whatsoever. So don't give your prosecutor the victory, at least make him work for it. Listen to what the courts have to say about this thing of keeping quiet in the face of police interrogation or police intimidation. The first judge put it this way. He said, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? He said that in U.S. versus Dickerson. The second judge put it this way. He said, you can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment. Now, he said that in Belknap versus United States. Now, the third judge put it this way. He said, the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and the farsighted. And he said that in Marchetti versus United States. If you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining. It's educational. It's informative. It's free. You can call and order one right now. Now, our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. All right, we're talking about property. Now, property is an unusual subject. Most of us have an idea as to what property is. You know, it's my car, it's my house, it's my big screen TV. And that's true. I don't deny it. But there's much more to property than just chattels, just land. And property is absolutely necessary for you if you're going to exercise any rights, privileges, and immunities guaranteed under your Constitution. Now, in 1868, Congress began this process by enacting an amendment to the Constitution right after the Civil War called the 14th Amendment. That's the amendment that started the ball rolling. That was the beginning of communism in the United States. And it came not too long after communists, Karl Marx in 1848 won the prize at the International Socialist Union in 1848. 20 years later, the United States and its political operatives wanted to implement this communist program. And the very first thing we did, we implemented the 14th Amendment. Now, the 14th Amendment deals with citizenship, and along with the Reconstruction Amendments, such as the 13th Amendment and 17th Amendment and so on, these amendments were designed to give people more freedom. Isn't that special? It's kind of like health care insurance. The objective here is designed to give more Americans rights to health care coverage, health care benefits. It works just exactly the opposite. Social Security was designed to give people more economic freedom. Works just exactly the opposite. Takes away your freedom, and it makes you a bondservant to government. So if we want to sell something to somebody, you can't come right out there and say, look, what I'm selling is AIDS, herpes, and VD. We have to be selling health and human services and wealth and prosperity. So we come along and we tell you one thing, and then we do something else. Now, that's the way government works. It's always been that way. I'm not telling you anything new. They're not coming out here saying, hey, let's rip off the American public by bailing out the banks. Hell, you can see what they're doing to you. They're doing it right out in the open now. Now, going back in time, let's get a little history as to what the 14th Amendment did and how it led up to and took away from us our rights and implemented, in place of rights, privileges and immunities that were originally intended only for corporations, aliens, blacks, and others, but now have been applied to whites, free men, as well as bondservants and blacks and everybody else. We didn't raise the black man from slavery. we lowered the white man to bond servitude. So the black man is raised from slavery to bond servitude, and the white man is reduced from freedom to bond servitude. That's where we're at. This is where we are located today in the game of government and rights. Now, there's a case called Hale versus Hinkle. It was actually decided after the 14th Amendment, but I want to start with Hale v. Hinkle because it delineates the distinctions between individuals, people who have constitutional rights, and corporations which do not. Then we'll go back and take a look at the 14th Amendment, which created this par value between individuals and corporations. And these are called adhesion contracts. As the old saying goes, can you say adhesion, boys and girls? Well, write it down because we'll be talking about adhesion contracts. Social Security is an adhesion contract, your driver's license, marriage license, business license. These are operations of law that occur when you sign on to something, but you don't have full disclosure as to what all the rules and regulations cover. For instance, you go down and get a driver's license, and they tell you sign here, and you fill out a form and some applications. It binds you to 2,000 traffic statutes. You never read the 2,000 traffic statutes and don't have a clue as to what this law covers, what this contract covers, but you've agreed to it. Furthermore, this contract changes from time to time. For instance, let me give you an illustration. When you signed on for your driver's license, did you sign on with an agreement, express or implied, that when you're driving down the road that you wouldn't use your cell phone? Then, after you signed on, the legislature says, well, we're going to enact a new rule or regulation, custom usage or practice, and bar you from using your cell phone while you're driving. Now, you didn't agree to that, but it's going to be applied to you ex post facto. Now, ex post facto laws are prohibited in our Constitution. But then, driving a car doesn't have anything to do with rights. It has to do with privilege. Remember, they told you plainly when you went to driver's ed in high school, driving is not a right, it's a privilege. So it's regulated under contract. Now, when we're talking about income tax, a fellow by the name of Aaron Russo, he made a movie, and he was interviewing the commissioner, the former commissioner of the IRS, and he asked him, he said, where in the IRS code does it bind me or require me to pay this tax? And the commissioner was very crafty. He would not answer the question. He dodged it. He ducked it. He did everything he could except answer the questions. Russo then came to the conclusion that there's no place in Title 26 that requires me to pay this tax. That's an error. In law, we call it plain error. Title 26 may not require you to pay the tax. I don't know. I told you last program. I never read Title 26. How do I know? But Title 42 does. The Section 3121 and 3121A, 3121B, coupled with Title 26, 7203, and 7343, and the four working together, require you to pay the income tax. How do you like that? Now remember, I'm not a legal scholar. I'm just a damn plumber. And if a plumber knows that, you can rest assured that the IRS commissioner knows that. But he's not going to tell you that. If you people out there ever knew and understood how this law works, you'd opt out of it. So when people say to me, sometimes they come to class and they say, well, the income tax is unconstitutional. Well, if it is, nobody in government or the courts have ever agreed to that. And the Supreme Court has weighed in on that a number of times. They said, oh, no. It is not unconstitutional. Remember, I mentioned that to you last night. They're careful to tell you it's not constitutional, but they tell you plainly it's not unconstitutional. And the reason that it isn't unconstitutional is because it doesn't have anything to do with the Constitution. It's contractual, and you contracted into it, and it's called an adhesion contract, and you signed up for it and didn't read the terms and conditions. And indeed, you probably don't even know where those terms and conditions are located. So let me tell you again. You go to Title 42, Section 301 to 335. There's your Social Security contract. Couple that now with Title 26, Section 3121A, 3121B, 7203, and 7343, and I'll tell you the answer. Now, the IRS commissioner knew that, and if he didn't, he should have known that. Now, a fellow by the name of Arthur Altmaier blew into Washington back in the New Deal years, and he's the guy that wrote up the Social Security Act, and it's written up after an old-timey program that was called, let's see if I can look it up here for you. It was called the George Rapp Harmony Society. George Rapp. It was a socialist, communist organization for the purposes of share and share alike, from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. And George Rapp put this Harmony Society together. Well, let me tell you the story. George Rapp and the George Rapp Harmony Society was the first successful communistic and religious organization in the United States. The society was designed for profit-making for some, and its formula included a controlled economy under limited liability. Now, this term, limited liability, boys and girls, is the buzzword for insurance. You people practice insurance. Barack Obama just sold you national health care insurance. Insurance is limited liability. Now, limited liability is strictly prohibited in the scripture. Your creator told you, don't you do that. You practice strict liability. Well, you know, God's kind of old. And he doesn't relate to modern economics. But I just thought I'd throw that out there for you and let you know that God told you not to do it, and Barack Obama said, no, this is what I want you to do. Limited liability. Now, that's the same ingredient of the Federal Reserve formula that's running our country today. This is the formula. This is that 10-plank formula that has brought admiralty inland and has barred our access to substantive common law. George Rapp founded the Harmony Society in 1805 at Harmony in Beaver County, Pennsylvania. He subsequently moved to Harmony on the Wabash in the state of Indiana. Then he moved to a place called Economy in Beaver County, Pennsylvania. Here's a little aside. George Bush Sr. is a member of the George Rapp Harmony Society. It's one of those secret societies like Skull and Bones and the Trilateral Commission and so on, which runs our government and indeed runs the governments of the world. George Bush Sr. Now, the nature of this society was brought to light in the case of Schreiber v. Rapp in 1836. It was heard before the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. This case was an action brought by Jacob Schreiber. He was the administrator of Peter Schreiber, who was deceased, and the action was brought against George Rapp and others doing business in company under the name of the Harmony Society, a DBA, doing business as an artificial entity, commonly known as a corporation today. Now, to sustain the action, the plaintiff proved by testimony that the Harmony Society possessed a great deal of wealth. This wealth was held in the form of personal property, real property, and factories. It was a pool of property. Now, witness Dr. Smith, who was once a member of the association. When Smith testified, he said, quote, they intended to make money when they entered into it. It was a part of their object. I believe there were articles at Harmony, but everyone was not obliged to sign it. Equal rights, equal enjoyments, and equal profits. Rapp said that it should not be incorporated because that would take too much power from him. Rapp was not elected. He assumed the power that Moses and Aaron had. If anyone would not do what he said, he would say, quote, what have you to do about it? I have the power. I could crush you. All you have to do is obey. And he got worse as he got wealthier. Well, George Rapp was a preacher, and he was a very successful and persuasive preacher. Adam Shelley testified on behalf of the plaintiff respecting the first articles of association on the Wabash. He said, the people were directed to come in companies. One of them read it, and the rest of them signed it. As to the article signed at Economy, Rapp made a long speech, and he said anyone who would sign it would have his name written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And if they did not sign it, their names would be blotted out, and God would ask him about it. Now the defendants, George Rapp and the association, to sustain the issue on their part, produced in evidence the articles of association. They produced the contract. And this contract is the precursor to the Social Security Act. So here's what we all joined up for, boys and girls, when we signed up for Social Security. Article 1, it says, we the undersigned for ourselves and our heirs, executors, and administrators, do hereby give, grant, and forever convey to the said George Rapp and his associates and their heirs and assigns all of our property for the benefit of the said association or community. And boys and girls, when you signed up for Social Security, you, the undersigned, for yourselves and your heirs, executors, administrators, gave, granted, and forever conveyed to the United States of America all of your labor for all of your life. Isn't that just special? And you did it for the benefit of the said United States of America. God love you. Article 2. We do further covenant and agree to, and with the said George Rapp and his associates, that we will severally submit faithfully to the laws and regulations of the said community, therefore holding ourselves bound to promote the interest and welfare of the said community, not only by the labor of our own hands, but also by that of our children, our families, and all others who are now are or hereafter may be under our control. That's what you turned over to the United States government through Social Security. Isn't that just special? Article 3, that we will never claim or demand either for ourselves, our children, or for anyone belonging to us directly or indirectly, any compensation, any payment, wages, or reward, whatever, for our or their labor or services rendered to the said community. Remember, boys and girls, in the last program I pointed out to you, you people haven't been paid. You're being discharged. That's why you don't have any property rights. You're getting checks, credit cards. You're getting Federal Reserve notes, but you're not getting paid. Payment is required to have property. And that's why you don't have any property. You're not being paid. The first thing you're going to have to do here, Bob, if you want to get your freedom and your liberties back, you've got to get your property and property rights back. That's number one. Now, once you get your property rights back, now we can talk about getting your liberties, getting you out from under regulations, Social Security, income tax, and so on. But as long as you've got a Social Security account number, you've got a contract. And your contract has to be faithfully observed and specifically performed upon. And if you don't do it, you've got some agents out there that are going to lock you up in jail until you do. All right, number five. The said George Rapp and his associates further agree to supply the undersigned severally with all the necessaries of life and to such extent as their circumstances may require. Social Security gives you 108 benefits. Now you've got a new one. It's called universal health care, socialized medicine, or as we call it here in the United States, health care insurance. In Article 6, if any of the undersigned should withdraw from the association, then the said George Rapp and his associates agree to refund to him or them the value of all such property without interest, as he or they may have brought into the community, said value to be refunded, as the said George Rapp and his associates shall determine. Now, you could drop out of Social Security until 1939, and then Congress came back and they said, once in, always in. Now, there is a way out of Social Security, but it's not statutorily provided. It comes under the doctrine of frauds. If you can show that Social Security has worked a fraud upon you, you could withdraw. If you can't show the fraud, you can't withdraw. Once in, always in. Now, the court ruled for defendant George Rapp on the basis that an association for the purpose expressed is prohibited neither by statute nor by the common law. It is supposed, however, that as the intestate had power by the articles to secede from the society and to take out whatever he had brought into it, the successor to his personal rights may exercise it as his representative. Such, however, are not the terms of the articles. The right of accession, therefore, is intransmissible. Shriver v. Rapp, Pennsylvania, 1836. Boys and girls, you have no rights associated with Social Security. That is a social welfare scheme. So determined the Supreme Court. No rights attendant to Social Security. No property rights. Social welfare scheme. Now, the court also stated that the law knows of no duress by advice and persuasion, and therefore there was no fraud in the inducement to sign the article. Now, an analysis of this case reveals that the complaint was brought under the jurisdiction of the common law. The plaintiff lost because of the common law and constitutionally protected right to contract. Under the common law, the only way to break the contract was to prove fraud, and according to testimony, the members of the association intended to make money when they entered into it. Boys and girls, you intend to get paid by Social Security, do you not? Your Social Security account number is, in fact, your taxpayer ID number, is it not? You voluntarily signed up for it, did you not? It is, in fact, a contract, an agreement between you in which you've agreed to give all of your labor for all of your life in exchange for the 109 benefits under Social Security. Have you not? All right. I'm not quite ready to rest my case yet, but I thought I would bring that to your attention. Now, there's another little piece that goes to the puzzle over here. It has to do with the 14th Amendment, and it has to do with Hale versus Hinkle. So now let's go over to Hale. Let me read that one to you. This is a case that was decided back about 1905. It's cited at 201 U.S. 43, if you want to look it up on Find Law, 201 U.S. 43, Hale v. Hinkle. We're on page 75. This is the American Tobacco Company, a corporation. And the company controller goes into the U.S. Supreme Court and says, hey, lighten up here. We've got rights. We've got rights. Now, the Supreme Court comes back and says, no, you don't. And here's the kicker. The reason that you, natural-born, and I hear this and I see it written all the time, but I'm not a corporation. I'm a flesh and blood human being. No, you're not. No, Bob, wake up. You signed an adhesion contract. If you act in a corporate capacity, you'll be treated as a corporation. When you signed up and got that job, you signed a W-4 form, son. And you agreed that you would act in a corporate capacity under the 14th Amendment. Oh, you didn't know that and you were ignorant. Bob, ignorance of the law is no excuse. And remember, you're a sovereign, a voter, remember? A sovereign, a voter, the master, aren't you? Now listen to this. Conceding that the witness was an officer of the corporation under investigation and that he was entitled to assert the rights of the corporation with respect to the production of its books and papers, we are of the opinion that there is a clear distinction in this particular between an individual and a corporation, and that the latter, the corporation, has no right to refuse to submit its books and papers for an examination at the suit of the state. This happens quite often. I'll just interject this. These are called show cause hearings, and sometimes a taxpayer who's been subpoenaed in by the IRS objects to the production of his books and papers. He thinks he's got Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. And so he goes in, he says, wait a minute, they need a search warrant and so on. And the federal judge is patient, condescending, any understanding. And then he never tells you the answer to the riddle, as he tells you, in effect, sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and produce the books and records. And the reason he does that is because you have a Social Security number. Oh, he didn't ask you for your Social Security number? Hell, he didn't need to. He presumes you have one. It's called a fiction of law. Write that down, boys and girls. Fiction of law. Can you say fiction, boys and girls? Now, just because you don't know what an adhesion contract is, or a fiction of law, or the 14th Amendment, you never read your contract under Title 42, Section 301, doesn't absolve you from the practice of these laws, statutes, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices that are imposed upon you by your own hand. Come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee here, children. Now, the court went on to say, and that the latter, that is, the corporation, has no right to refuse to submit its books and papers for an examination at the suit of the state, the individual may stand upon his constitutional rights as a citizen. And I have people come into class, that's what I am, that's what I am, I'm an individual, I'm an individual. Boys and girls, listen up. Just saying I am an individual does not make it so. If you could just say, I am a citizen, I am a citizen, and if you could make it so by just saying, I am a citizen, we wouldn't have 20 million aliens in this country. They'd all be citizens. You are not an individual because you say you are an individual any more than you are a citizen because you say, I am a citizen. If you want to be a citizen, there are some things you have to do to accomplish that goal. And if you wanted to be an individual, you could be, but there are some things you're going to have to do to achieve that status. And it comes under status of persons. That's what that's talking about. Now, he, the individual, is entitled to carry on his private business in his own way. He, the individual, has power to contract, and that power is unlimited. He, the individual, owes no duty to the state or to his neighbors to divulge his business or to open his doors to an investigation, so far as it may tend to incriminate him. He, the individual, owes no such duty to the state, since he, the individual, receives nothing therefrom. You should underline that one. He, the individual, receives nothing from the state. You people all receive 108 benefits under Social Security, privilege to drive, citizenship. Come on. All of these benefits, aid to families with dependent children, unemployment insurance, workman's compensation, did you think you got that free? Hey, you're going to pay every last farthing for all of those benefits. You have to. Government doesn't have any wealth. Government doesn't have any money. Government doesn't produce anything. Government is a parasite, not a producer. Government has nothing to give you until they first take it away from you. So that's why I said, you know, Bob, you're going to pay every last farthing. You people think you got free health care? free health care? Hey, I got something for nothing. Bill Gates and George Soros are going to pay for my health care. Good news for you, Tommy. You're going to be paying for that for the rest of your life every time you buy a bag of potato chips or a bag of French fries or a hamburger. You're going to pay for it in the prices. Corporations don't pay tax, remember? They just collect it and pass it on. You're the guy that's going to pay the tax. So the individual owes no such duty to the state since he receives nothing from the state beyond the protection of his life and property, which are guaranteed by the Constitution. He, his, the rights of the individual are such as existed by the law of the land, the common law, antecedent to the organization of the state, and can only be taken from him by due process of law and in accordance with the Constitution. And among his rights are a refusal to incriminate himself and the immunity of himself and his property from arrest or seizure except under a warrant of the law. He owes nothing to the public so long as he does not trespass upon their rights. Well, individuals have rights. Corporations don't. And people who join corporate capacity don't have rights. So William Bendix used to say, what a revolting development this has turned out to be. Hang on, it's halfway time here. I got to give you a reminder here for the FCC that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. They were sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. And if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. And we do it from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desks. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-7000. 4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, click onto the email, or better yet, click onto the archives page, and then you can download that free general law CD package right off of our archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, and to the best of our knowledge and belief, the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine or mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the subject of law. In Hale versus Hinkle, there are two entities that are being spoken of here or being explained. First, the court says individuals have rights under the Constitution. Then they go on to explain that corporations do not have rights under the corporation. And that what we're doing under the Constitution, I should say, and what they're explaining here is that when we, natural human beings, join corporate capacity, then we waive our rights and we accept privileges and immunities under corporate capacity. Let me give you an illustration. Today, you're free. But one day you decide, for whatever reason, that you want to join the Army. You've listened to the Army recruiter, and he said, you know, you can travel around the world, and we want 2 years of your service. We want you to go to college, and we're going to pay for that college when you get through, and we have these benefits, and you're going to get room and board and so much a month and a uniform allowance, and you're going to do all these wonderful things, and it's just a great deal. And he has a contract there. It's called an enlistment contract, and you sign that contract. This brings you under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. It divorces you from your Constitution. It divorces you from the Fourth Amendment. It divorces you from the Fifth Amendment. Now, you're in the Army, and one day the sergeant says, hey, Bob, open up your footlocker. I want to inspect it. Now you, having gone to Mrs. Lowry's civics class, you say, you remember somewhere where there's constitutional rights, and you say, wait, you can't just come into somebody's house and make these demands without a search warrant, and you say to the sergeant, no, I will not open my footlocker. You go get a search warrant. How do you think that's going to come out? Do you believe that a petty officer on an aircraft carrier needs a search warrant to look in your footlocker, sailor? Do you think that a sergeant in the Army needs your permission? And I tell you, he doesn't. And he doesn't because you have contracted your constitutional rights away for a period of time. Now, you know, people do that all the time, and they should be alerted to the fact that we have a law here called the Uniform Code of UCMJ, and that's a different law than the laws you're used to out here on the street. They don't have things like due process and jury trials. They have summary process and admiralty. So if you're wondering when you go into the traffic court while you get this summary process, it's an admiralty court. People say, I was in there and they had a fringed flag. Well, of course they have a fringed flag. It's an admiralty court. All admiralty courts have fringe flag. And you signed up for it, remember, when you got your driver's license. You signed up for it, you know, when you got your business license. Hey, you sign up for these deals. And all of these deals require your signatures. And then you make these contracts with government agencies. You know, you got a business license, and you opened up, and you signed up with the sales tax people, remember? And now you got to collect a sales tax and pay it over. And then you got the income tax, unemployment insurance, workman's compensation. I mean, you got a lot of things over here you have to do, but you agreed to all of those things. That's corporate capacity. Now you say, well, but that's not me. I just work here. I'm an employee. Hell, you belong to the union, got a social security number, and signed a W-4 form. Now you're going to sit there and say you got rights? You're going to sit there and tell the highway cop that you're not going to breathe into the balloon? Come on, guys. Time to wake up and smell the coffee here. Now listen to what corporate capacity does. On the other hand, the corporation is a creature of the state and is presumed to be incorporated for the benefit of the public. Corporations are there for the benefit of the public. And when you join corporate capacity, you're there for the benefit of the public. God love you. Thank you very much, Bob. Yet, the corporation receives certain special privileges and franchises. Privileges and franchises are not rights. Privileges and franchises are those events that you participate in periods of good behavior, when your daddy's liking you and you're feeding the dog, taking out the garbage and making your bed. then you can ride your bicycle. That's a privilege. That's a franchise. And you hold these privileges and franchises subject to the laws of the state and the limitations that are imposed upon you by your charter. The corporate powers are limited by law. Corporations can make no contracts that are not authorized by its charter. Corporations' rights to act as a corporation are only preserved to it so long as it obeys the laws of its creation. There is reserved in the legislature the right to investigate the contracts of corporations and to find out whether they have exceeded their powers. It would be a strange anomaly to hold that a state, having chartered a corporation to make use of certain franchises, could not, in the exercise of its sovereignty, inquire as to how these franchises had been employed and whether they had been abused, and then demand the production of the corporate books and papers for that purpose. Corporations don't have rights. Now, when you join corporate capacity, you waive your rights. Now, you do this because you want the benefits. I remember when I was a youngster, I wanted to deliver newspapers. I wanted to be a paper boy. So I went down, filled out the applications, and the route manager came out to interview my daddy. And during the interview, he said, "Does your son, little Georgie, over here, does he have a Social Security number?" And my daddy said, no, he doesn't. "Well, you can't be a paper boy without a Social Security number." Now, the newspaper was the Humboldt Standard Incorporated. And if you want to work for the Humboldt Standard, you have to join corporate capacity. And so I had to go down and get a Social Security number in order to get hired by the newspaper in order to deliver newspapers. I did it willingly. I did it voluntarily. I signed up as a taxpayer, and I signed up for the benefits. I joined the club, just like joining the Army. All right, now, when I did that, I waived my Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights, not in everything that I endeavored to do, but in certain things that I did, specifically those activities that dealt with the national economy, that dealt with money, checks, credit cards, credit, interstate commerce, buying, selling, and trading. And, you know, newspaper boys go out and sell newspapers, and they collect money. And I'm going to be regulated and controlled in the way that I use this money. That's all. And the taxes that I have to pay and things like that. Now, with Hale versus Hinkle out of the way, let's go back now and take a look at this thing called the 14th Amendment. Well, just as the 1789 United States statutes at large are code interpretations of the Constitution, all local and state, federal and national and international codes, in addition to treaties dealing with corporations, aliens, foreigners, and blacks are interpretations of the totally new Constitution that we call the 14th Amendment. This 14th Amendment, when it was enacted, works to take away your property rights. Now, the First Commandment says this. It says, "You shall have no other gods before me." God is a lawmaker. I don't know if you knew that or not, but he is. He's the guy that makes laws like thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not bear false witness. Remember the Sabbath day? You shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your back. Come on. This guy's a lawmaker. Now, he said, "You shall not have any other lawmakers in front of me." And so we come along and we create the United States of America, Texas, California, Washington, and Oregon. We elect legislators to create laws. Then we sign contracts so that we can go obey those laws. And when we obey those laws, we worship our gods. The obedience to these laws is called worship. You know, your Creator says, "You shall worship the Eternal, your God, and Him only shall you serve." Why, you people don't serve the Creator of the universe. You people are signed up to serve Texas and the United States and Mexico, which, by the way, is called idolatry, and idolatry is a capital felony. Just thought I'd throw that one out there, too. Now, you know, the United States works the same way. You know, if you commit an act of treason against the United States, they want to take you out and kill you. So don't be surprised that God wants to take you out and kill you for the act of treason that you've committed against Him. Now, I know somebody's going to write me a letter. I can feel it in my bones. And they're going to say, but I didn't commit an act of treason against God. Sure you did. Sure you did. Let me show you where. Over here in 1 Samuel chapter 8, that's where you did it. That's when it happened. 1 Samuel chapter 8. It was your great-great-great-great-granddaddy. 84 generations back. And you know what he said? He said, "All that the Eternal has done, we will be obedient." And he bound himself to the Ten Commandment model, bound himself to the Creator of the universe. And he bound all of his heirs and assigns forever. Now, in case you didn't know how long forever was, I don't know either. I know that forever is a long time, and I can figure that much out. And I know that forever isn't up yet. So that means that forever is still in operation today. I know that much. So your great-great-granddaddy said, "All that the Eternal has done, we agree to, and we'll be bound by this, and we'll bind our heirs and assigns forever." Hell, you got the same deal here with the United States of America, Canada, and Australia. You got a constitution. Did you people attend the Constitutional Convention and vote for it? Or are you people citizens of Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, and you're the heirs and the sons of the people who did that? Well, here in the United States, our forefathers created this Constitution, bound all the rest of us to it, and the day you were born, son, you were bound to it. Like it or lump it. But that's the way it works. That's the way the game's played. Now, Samuel was the chief judge of Israel back about 1100 B.C., and the people came to Samuel and they said, you know, it says in verse 4, all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and they came to Samuel at Ramah. And they said to him, behold, you're old, your sons don't walk in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations around us. Hey, we're the guys that said, hey, look, we're tired of this God guy over here. We're tired of this crap. And we want a king. Now, this thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed to God. And the Eternal said unto Samuel, hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto you. Because, Sam, they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. And according to all of the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto you. So, boys and girls, your rebellion against your Creator is nothing new. Hell, we've been doing that for 3,500 years. We, the Anglo-Saxon people, are old hands at giving our Creator the finger. We've been doing it for a long time. We're good at it. Now, God's pretty broad-minded. Notice here, he says, hey, listen. Listen to these people. They want a king. Give them one. But before you do that, he said, now therefore hearken unto their voice, howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them. Show them what Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, and Franklin D. Roosevelt are going to do. Tell them. For me. So Samuel went on. He said, now listen. Samuel told all the words of the Lord unto the people and said, here's what's going to happen. This will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots, and to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots. He's going to send them off to Iraq and Afghanistan to fight in corporate wars to make the world safe for Standard Oil, Exxon, and Shell oil companies. And he's going to appoint him captains over thousands, captains over fifties, and he's going to set them to ear his ground to reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and his instruments for his chariots. He's going to create the automobile industry and then take it over in a socialist power grab. He's going to create an industrial military complex and put you to work in it. Then he's going to tax you to pay for it all. Then he's going to create a Department of Agriculture, and then he's going to control, and he's going to take away all of your farm produce. Are you paying attention here to what he's telling us? This is back about 1100 B.C. Then he goes on, he says in verse 13, he's going to take your daughters to be confectionaries and to be cooks and to be bakers. They're going to have to work in the economy to support your families. And then he's going to take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servants. He's going to take them away and give them to the IRS. He's going to seize your property over here when you become immigrants and rebels. And he's going to take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give to his officers and his servants. He's going to tax you, and he's going to give the proceeds to Chase Manhattan Bank and to Citicorp and Goldman Sachs. He's going to have bailouts for all of the bankers and the insiders. That's verse 14. That's verse 15. And then he's going to take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. He's going to take the tenth of your sheep, and you shall be his servants. He's going to saddle you with regulations and OSHA and the EPA and the State Tax Commission, and you can serve your God, the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and France, and Germany, and, you know, just go ahead, name them. And then in verse 18 he says, you're going to cry out to me in that day because of your king, which you have chosen you, the one you've elected, the one you wanted because you wanted change. And the Eternal will not hear you in that day. So when I have students that come in here, you know, and they bitch a lot, and they tell me about how bad Barack Obama is and Bill Clinton and all these politicians and going on, I tell them, well, you can save your breath. You don't need to pray to Jesus because he's already told you, you ain't listening to this crap. So if you think you're going to go pray to Jesus and he's going to come save you, I think you can save your breath. I wouldn't tell you not to. You know, if it makes you feel good, you need a little talisman, I think it's called. Now, nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, no, but we will have a king over us. Now, remember, God told Samuel, said, now go tell these people what's going to happen. You know, there's a cause and effect relationship here. And so Samuel told them, and you know what they said? Nevertheless, we're going to have a king. And so even after God told them, you know, let me explain this to you. So I do this in classroom quite often. Let me explain the Social Security income tax connection here, kids. And, you know, people, sometimes they listen, sometimes they don't. I'm not here to get you to believe what I'm telling you. I don't care whether you believe it or not. I'm just here as a reporter. I'm here to tell you. No, let me just tell you. This is the way this game is played. Here's my sources. Here's my authority. I'm reading it to you. So that's the way that story came out. Now, today, people want to practice the laws of the United States. Well, that's fine. Now pay your taxes and shut up. That's all. Pay your fees and shut up. Now, some people come in here and they say, well, we're tired of this. We think we made a mistake. Is there any way out? And the answer is, you bet. You bet. You know, you can change this anytime you want. You go back to practicing what produces the results that you desire. Now, you joined the Army, remember, with that uniform code of military conduct attached to your contract. Well, that contract will expire someday. When it expires, you don't have to re-enlist. You can get a discharge from the Army. Quit doing that. Now, if you'd like to be discharged from Social Security, the Income Tax, the State Tax Commission, OSHA, the EPA, and the rest of these governmental agencies over there, then we have to go back to practicing property and property rights. We have to go back to gold and silver and the Ten Commandment model. That's all. It's what we did under our Constitution. It's provided for. You people in Australia and New Zealand, you people are Anglo-Saxons, and you practice Anglo-Saxon administration. You can do the same thing. You can opt out. It's not easy. I'm not suggesting to you, you know, if you're just going to waltz in someplace and say, hey, take me off the rolls, that ain't going to happen. But with a little work, you know, it's called repentance in the Scripture. If you'll repent of these crimes, these criminal procedures or practices you've been engaged in, and start practicing the Ten Commandments in place of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, you can, in fact, extricate yourself from this dilemma. We'll take a look at that as we progress along. I'll show you how. Well, meanwhile, back on the farm here, I got to remind you that we're out of time, so let me tell you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in about 120 countries, plus over the internet and radio daily. Now, for more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school where we're open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the law hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. Hey, we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.